Well, I first came to La Crete in 1970, and I don't know whether you have any idea why I would have come here. I was in my 20s, and I came with the SBC choir. The SBC choir came to sing here, and at that time there was no EMC church. There was no bridge. It was the month of May, and how would we cross the river? Well, there's always a way. So that Cessna 180 put in three students, and we flew across the river. It came back and got another three students, and came back and got another three, until all 18 of us were on this side of the river. And then we sang in the school, and the next day we flew back, three students at a time, till we were back on the other side. Well, since then, Min and I have come here many times. It must be 10, 12 times. People often say it's far away, and it is far away from where we live. But we find it's a good place to come to. And so we enjoy being here each time. Over the years that Min and I have been married and have moved around here and there, we have lived in quite a few different places. For some years, we lived in northern Manitoba in a place called God's Lake Narrows. And there was a church there. No, there were two churches, maybe three. There was a Roman Catholic Church, and there was a United Church. And then there were some others of us who didn't feel so comfortable in those churches. And so we had our own church. We lived for some time in Ridgewood, which was our home, but then we lived a year in Minneapolis, and we attended a Baptist church. We lived in Brandon, and we attended an Alliance church. We lived in London, Ontario for a year, and we helped start the Mount Salem EMC church. We lived in Nigeria for a year, and we went to an Ekwa church, Evangelical Church of West Africa. But always we came back to Ridgewood. That was home. And that was where we were nurtured, where we grew up in our Christian life, where people knew us. I would say where we belonged. You might notice in the bulletin that the sermon is entitled, Why Belong to a Church? What does it mean to belong? Well, when it comes to church, I say you belong when you know where you're going Sunday morning. When you know where to go when you're in trouble. When you know where to go when you face a major time in your life that's very important, like marriage or having children or when someone dies. You know where you go and you know where you are. There are some people who are never quite sure. They get up in the morning and, well, will we go there or will we go there or will we stay home? Or what will we do? It's like, well, in a way, it's like someone who's engaged and never quite gets married. Some people look at church that way. They never make the complete commitment. This is where I belong. These are my people. And these are the ones who understand me, the ones who I understand, and I know where I belong. And so I would like to say this morning, it is a good thing to know where you belong. Not only good, it's important. Well, then what do I mean by church? Well, one thing I don't mean is the building. If you read the Bible, you will find that the Bible never talks about church as a building. It doesn't understand that idea. We have the very unfortunate situation in our English language that we have one word And that says the people, and it means the building, and we don't always know what we're talking about. Well, this morning, I won't talk about the building. Now, some of you know German, and you know that in Low German, we say de Chork, or we say de Gemeinde, or in High German, de Kirche und die Gemeinde. So there are two words, and we know exactly what we're talking about. But this morning, when we speak English, we're speaking about the church, the people. Now, you know, the church, the idea of a church is not our idea. It's not something we thought up as God's people. It is Jesus' idea. And the first time that he mentions the word church in the scriptures is in the book of Matthew. And he says in Matthew 16, verse 18, "And I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades or hell will not overcome it." Matthew 16, 18. He says, "I will build my church." And the church is his church. It is not something we thought up, not something we started, not something that we in our brilliant ways figured out. It was Jesus who said he would build his church. We sometimes talk in terms of, you know, it's Peter Jansen's church or Jack Newdorf's church or someone else's church. It's not true. It doesn't work that way. In fact, the Corinthians had trouble with that. They were following men instead of following Jesus. And in 1 Corinthians 3, 5 to 9, it says, "What, after all, is Apollos, and what is Paul? Only servants, through whom you have come to believe, as the Lord has assigned to each his task. I planted the seed, Apollos watered, but God made it grow. So neither the one who plants nor the one who waters is anything, but only God who makes things grow. And the one who plants and the one who waters have one purpose, and they will each be rewarded according to their own labor. For we are co-workers in God's service. You are God's field, God's building." It is Jesus' church. He is the head, and we are the body. And we know that the body is attached to the head. There are sometimes people who would rather not be attached to the head. But we know when the body is not attached to the head, it's not a good scene. And when we speak of the church, we speak of the head and the body, both of them, and they're connected to each other. So we, as God's people, are the body connected to Jesus. Well, why? Why belong to a church? And this is for you who wonder sometimes. You are here, and you're in the Crete, and you say you're EMC, but sometimes you wonder, why is that so important? Or maybe you're here, and you're sure you don't want to belong to this group of people. You're here this morning, but you'd rather not be identified as EMC, as LCCF, I think you use that here. Well, I say to all of you that you need to belong to a church. And you need to know that you belong, and you need to know where you belong. Why? Number one, you need Jesus. And where do you find Jesus? You find Jesus as part of the church, as the head of the church. And so the church is where the Christians are. The church is where the believers are. The church is where Jesus is, and Jesus is the head of the church. Can you be saved outside the church? Can you be a Christian and not belong to a church? Well, I will let you discuss that question more over the lunch hour, whether that is possible. So don't discuss me, discuss the question. Can you be a Christian outside the church? I will tend to say this morning, you can't. You can't, and you might find those words a bit hard, but I will still say it. We have 1 Corinthians 12, verses 12 and 13, where it says, "Just as a body, though one has many parts, and all its many parts form one body, so it is with Christ. For we are all baptized in one spirit into one body, whether Jews, Gentiles, slave or free, we're all given the one spirit to drink. And even so, the body is not made of one part, but of many. Romans 12:5. So in Christ, we, though many, form one body, and each member belongs to all the others. Ephesians 5, for we are all members of his body. Now, some people would like to say it's going to be just me and Jesus. You know, if I can find someone who can dunk me or pour me or sprinkle me or something, then I will be baptized into Jesus, and that's all I need and it's all I want. But you know, Paul spends a chapter, all of chapter 12, and talks about the church as a body and Jesus being the head of that body. Well, and you are some part of that body. Maybe you're a hand, maybe you're just the thumb, I don't know. We need the thumb, we know the thumb is very important. Maybe you're the big toe, maybe you're the liver, maybe you're something else in the body, but you're something in that body. Well, if it's just you and Jesus, that means you've got that hand sticking out here, just you and Jesus. You don't want anything to come between you and Jesus. So here's the hand. And someone else is the big toe, so the big toe comes out here. And so some other part of the body, the liver, is flopping around over here somewhere. If that idea of just you and Jesus works, then that's the picture you get. And that is not the picture Paul gives us. He gives us the picture of a body that functions and works together, each one providing what is needed by the body. And who tells the heart and the lungs and the feet and whatever what to do? It comes from the head, from our brain. That central place where all the instructions are given, some automatically, some very voluntarily. It's not just you and Jesus. It's you being part of the body where Jesus is the head. Number two, why belong to a church? Because you need help. You do. You might not always think so, but you need help from the rest of us. We cannot really do it by ourselves. We need our Sunday school class around us. We need our Bible study group. We need this church. Sometimes we need other churches to help us do our work. And we need the church and the world. All together, we do the work of the Lord. Galatians 6, verses 1 and 2 says, brothers and sisters, if someone is caught in a sin, you who live by the Spirit should restore that person gently. But watch yourselves, as you also may be tempted. Carry each other's burdens, and in this way, you will fulfill the law of Christ. You need help in your marriage. You need help in understanding the Bible. You need help in overcoming sin. You need help in developing your gifts. You need help in obeying your parents. You need help in stopping your gossip, in loving your enemies, in restoring bad relationships. You need help in how you spend your money. You need help when someone dies and you're in sorrow. And you need people around you when you're rejoicing. You need other people. Proverbs tells us many times that in the counsel of many is wisdom. And that is why we need others. We need other people. We need the people of the church. Number three, you need the accountability and the discipline that the church gives. Well, we don't really like that idea too well. We don't like to be told what to do. We don't like to be corrected. We don't like to be responsible to other people. We like to just do our own thing. But we do need one another. We need other people to help us to learn how to agree together. And we need to learn how to disagree. Sometimes when I've been premarital counseling, a couple who wants to get married, I ask them the question, do you know how to fight with each other? And I ask, how did your parents fight? How did your parents fight? And so she says, my parents screamed like crazy. And after they screamed at each other for half an hour, they hugged and kissed, and life went on. And he says, my parents? No. When my parents were fighting, everything was quiet. They didn't talk to each other for 3 days. That's the way they fought. Well, you too, how will you disagree? How will you disagree with each other? How will you do it? Will you learn to do it well? And maybe both of those aren't the best ways. Well, what about in the church? This church must have come to some agreement somewhere along the line to build your building. There must have been quite a bit of agreement. But you know, sometimes a church doesn't agree. And you sit there and you're one of the ones who just doesn't agree with everyone else. And maybe you're sitting here right now and you said, I didn't agree with the building of this church and I didn't give 1 cent to it and I never would. Those things do happen. They do happen. But I don't know you, so I don't know about that. I remember a time when our church, the Ridgewood Church, decided that we were going to build, I don't remember which one it was, the sanctuary or the lobby or foyer or whatever, but it was one of those times when I did not agree. I was not in favor. I just was not in favor. Whatever the reasons were, fortunately, I've forgotten lots of it, but I remember I didn't favor it. And however, even though I spoke, and maybe a few others did, where there was a vote, and what do you know? 80-some percent said, let's do it. Well, you know what some people do when something like that happens and they don't agree? They go out, slam the door, and the stones fly all over the place as they leave the churchyard. Well, I didn't do that. But I had to do something, right? What would I now do with this situation? Well, here's what I did. When it came time for pledging, I said, I didn't do that. I pledged my amount and a little bit more. And when I left that door over there, I said, our church has decided to build. And when you leave the back door, this is what you do. You are then in favor of the decision the church has made. The church, your church, our church, has made the decision. And then we move together. And we have to learn to be free and to disagree like that. And then when the decision is made, we do it together. We do it together. I'm not sure whether this was when we decided to build, but about 10 years ago, we had a building plan. And this year came, and we still had a mortgage. I don't know if you have a mortgage or not, but we did. And I think it was something like $200,000 were left. And someone got fed up with making the payments, some finance person, and said, we don't have to do this. Who cares whether the interest rate is low? Let's not do this anymore. And so at the beginning of 2013, this year, the finance committee came and said, we'd like to pay for the church this year. How would you be in favor of our doing that? And someone somewhere made a decision. We are not always home, so we don't always know what's going on. But someone made a decision, yes, that would be a good idea. And so they said, well, we need pledges, people who will agree to do that. Well, throughout the year, the thermometer went up and up and up and up and up on the wall there, you know. And Thanksgiving came around, and we weren't there either. But they had an offering for the last bit. And they said, we're here, and we need some more money. I think they needed something like something like 60,000 maybe was needed. Let's have an offering. They counted the offering, and they had 20,000 extra. The mortgage apparently is paid, and we have money we don't know what to do with. I hope they have some good ideas. I should say, I hope we have some good ideas. Sorry, caught myself there. Well, we need the church to help us, to be accountable, to help us in making good decisions, to bring together all the wisdom we can find. Number four, you need the opportunities that the church can give. Opportunities to use your gifts, opportunities to be of help to others. Ephesians 4 says that Christ gave the apostles, the prophets, the evangelists, the pastors and teachers to equip the people for works of service so that the body of Christ may be built up until we all reach what? Unity. Till we all reach unity in the faith and in the knowledge of the Son of God and become mature, attaining to the whole measure of the fullness of Christ. You need the opportunities that the church can give to serve each other, and not only that, to serve people outside the church. We were told when Jesus left that we were to baptize, to disciple all around the world. And I'm so pleased when I hear of people who are willing to leave La Crete, leave Ridgewood, and go elsewhere to serve. And we have all those gifts inside the church, and it is our responsibility here to equip people to do that. Well, the last one, number five. You need to be on the right side of the gate. You know which gate? The gate to hell. We read that verse at the beginning where Jesus was talking to Peter, and we'd like to read some of that again, a longer passage. Matthew 16, 13 to 20, where it says, when Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, who do people say the Son of Man is? And they replied, some say John the Baptist, some say Elijah, still others, Jeremiah or one of the prophets. But what about you, he asked, who do you say that I am? Simon Peter answered, you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. Jesus replied, blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for this was not revealed to you by flesh and blood, but by my Father in heaven. And I tell you that you are Peter. And on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades or hell will not overcome it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Then he ordered his disciples not to tell anyone that he was the Messiah. It talks here about the gates of Hades. It talks about the keys to the kingdom. And when we read in Revelation 1:18, it says, I am the living one. I was dead, and now look, I am alive forever and ever. I hold the keys of death and Hades. So there are the keys. You want to be on the right side of that gate. It says here that the gates of hell will not prevail against it. It says that we are given the keys to that gate. When Minna's mom went to a care home, she was about 85 or so. And mom had done very well over the years, but somehow her mind wasn't quite as sharp, and she couldn't remember things as well. And finally, when the range wasn't turned off all the time when it should, and various things happened, finally the family said, well, maybe it would be better for mom to go to a care home. So she went to Rest Haven in Steinbach. Well, mom was pretty sharp in some ways still, and mom always had the gift of helps. She helped people, and she continued to. Well, she noticed something. She noticed that in this care home, when some people walked by the door locked, and they couldn't get out. It was a beautiful day out there, and these people were stuck inside. And she noticed they had a little bracelet, you know. And so when they went to the door and wanted to go out to enjoy the sunshine, they couldn't. They couldn't. Well, Mom said, why can't they? So she was going to help them. So one day, she went to the door and she opened it. She wasn't wearing a bracelet. She opened the door and said, "Now you can all go home." And she held the door and they walked out. And, you know, very soon all the nurses and the aides and so on, of course, knew this would not work very well. And Mom got a bracelet. Those bracelets locked the doors. Do you know what this key does here? It opens the door. It opens the door. And what gate are you going to open? You are going to go to that gate. It says, the gates of Hades, the gates of hell. You're going to go to that gate. You're going to put in the key, and you're going to open the gate. And what are you going to do? You're going to invite the people on the other side to come through the gate and join you here, to join you in the church. And you know what? There is nothing Satan can do about that. Satan has the deadbolts on the other side, on his side of the gate. And for some people, he's got a whole row of deadbolts, every one of them. But you know what you can do? You've got a little key. It's not a bomb, it's not a gun, it's not dynamite, it's nothing like that. It's a little key. And you go to that gate and you turn the key, and if it needs 10 keys, 10 locks, you do all of them and you invite the people to come to your side of the gate. And what is the key? The key is the gospel, the message of Jesus. It's the message that Jesus saves. That is your key. And you can use that key anytime you want, as long as you want, and there's nothing that can be done from the other side to prevent you. Because you have the key that Jesus has given you. However often Satan locks that door again, you can go and open it. When you share of Jesus, you are using that key, and you're saying, "I'm opening the gates. And the gates of hell will not overcome. The gates of hell will not overcome the church. You are the church with the key, with the gospel." Every time you tell someone about Jesus, you're using that key and you're saying, "Come to our side. Come to our side." We sometimes think that key is to lock the door so people can't come. Let's keep them out. No, no, no. That key never is used to keep people out. It's always to bring people in. I trust you will use that key often. All the time, in fact, with your words, with your deeds, you use that key and invite people to the church, to the right side of the gate. May the Lord bless you.